Representative Kopanen. Representative Brown was here. That gives us a quorum. I just want to announce that we're going to, everybody who has amendments that they're going to offer or intent language has to give it to the Finance Committee staff now. They're going to handle the logistics of making sure that we all are reading off the same sheet of music through the rest of the day. And we're going to recess until 12 o'clock sharp. Sharp, not on the button, sort of. Until 12 o'clock so that we can get the logistics plan, hopefully, to make this thing go smoother. So if you have amendments, they haven't given them to the finance staff yet, they have to have them immediately. And we are in recess until 12 o'clock.
You can come and check and see what we have for you. Make sure you have all the right...
You hear that?
Finance committee meeting will come back to order. Finance committee meeting will come to order. All members are present. First thing I'd like to start with is we provided a summary sheet of the governor versus the House budget overall and where the major differences are. And we'll update that between today and tomorrow or whenever we have the final budget ready so that we'll have some type of a comparison so we can show where we're different from the governor's amended budget. I'm going to start with the decrements. We're going to go by agency, decrements by agency, and consider all the amendments by agency. When we finish with the decrement amendments, we'll, depending on where we're at, we'll take a short break and then go with the increment amendments. The first thing I want to do is make notice of the finance subcommittee's recommendations or the finance subcommittee's decrement list that we required as part of the overall plan this year, and unless there is a subcommittee chair who intends to move one of the decrement lists, my intention is to not consider these decrements. Is there any subcommittee chair who wishes to move the decrement list as that the subcommittee's put together as part of our plan? Not. We'll begin with the Department of Administration. You should have on your desks a package of amendments to the Department of Administration. First one is by Representative Phillips. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, these amendments are not marked by numbers, so I assume this will be amendment number one.
That will be amendment number one.
Mr. Chairman, I move for the adoption of amendment number one.
Check. Amendment number one is the Older Alaskans Commission.
Chairman, this amendment brings the figure to the governor's recommended figure for the personnel and travel. The executive director of this organization with the salaries and salary and benefits combined $107,000. I think that's excessive, particularly when they're supervising, I think, around 14 or 18 people. This amendment reduces that salary, and later on, I will be offering letters of intent in regards to some of these positions on your salary.
Senator Barr,
Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The difference here results from the fact that we didn't take the forced vacancy and the 10% travel in this component. And I think the practical effect is of the 17 positions that are now, they will probably lose a position. And I think we could probably accept this amendment.
Is there objection to amendment number one? Without objection, amendment number one has been adopted.
Can I ask you, on the letter intents, are you going to take those later?
Yeah,
that this one's combined. All right.
That's why I mentioned letter intent.
Amendment number two, Department of Administration Public Broadcasting. Representative Phillips.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of amendment number two.
Object.
Chairman, this amendment restores the governor's original proposed budget for the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission. It makes a deletion of $2.197 million. It cuts the amount of funding necessary for TV in areas where commercial TV already exists, which is Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. And I also have a letter of intent for this, specifying that if these reductions are accepted, that the commission will not take it out of the public radio around the state, just for TV in those areas.
Objection maintained.
Yes.
Okay, there is objection.
Any discussion on the
amendment? Yes. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would recommend against adoption of this amendment. The money that the governor is proposing would eliminate about 30% of the overall funds and grants to radio and television stations. Costs are going up, and there is a real continued squeeze, and I believe these stations are running on a shoestring as it is. I think public broadcasting serves a very important purpose in both urban and rural Alaska. It brings in federal money, private money, and I hate to see us begin dismantling the public broadcasting program and the public broadcasting network. I think it's an important part of life, and it delivers essential services, particularly in rural Alaska, as well as providing for quality of life throughout Alaska and a sense of community. So I'd urge the committee not to adopt this.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment does not affect rural Alaska. It affects only urban Alaska. Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. It's targeted where commercial TV already exists to reduce that funding for public TV. Now, myself, personally, I just don't think this is a function of government. And that if the public really wants to support it, they will support it with their own dollars for public TV. This amendment does not affect the rural areas. Bethel has public TV, and that intent is not to affect them, nor does it affect the radio in the state of Alaska. It's aimed strictly at public TV where commercial TV already exists. That's all I can say about the amendment itself.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, the Public Broadcasting Commission would decide how to take that reduction. We cannot guarantee there would not be impacts on rural Alaska, eliminating funds for the television stations. And I would question your assertion that it would not affect the Bethel television station. It would be one option. Also, they could choose to just do it proportionately, a reduction to all stations. We don't know what they would do, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question through the chair to Representative Phillips. Representative Phillips, as it relates to public television, would this not affect the programming that goes out over the airways, such as Sesame Street, to the rural areas of the state?
That would depend on whether the public wants to support it through their own private contributions to the public TV station.
There further, Representative Larson and
Phillips. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm showing some of my prejudices here. I'm not going to support this amendment, although I'm leaning to, just for the simple reason that every other year, the station in Anchorage, the TV, I think really exploits and cheapens candidates for political office by inviting us to stand up on a fake railroad platform and give a fake speech in front of a fake crowd. I would like to see them become more public and more professional in the way in which they provide those types of services. So I'm not going to support this amendment, but I hope they also take a look at how they do business and how they display public figures, politicians.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I also have a letter of intent. Can I read it? Just it's tied in. If this amendment is defeated, it's no use moving the amendment or the letter of intent. It is the intent of the legislature that the reduction in personal services be accompanied first by reductions in salary paid to the executive director and then reductions in the number of staff months. It is also the intention of the legislature that no funds be transferred to personal service line from grants or any other line. It is further the intent of the legislature that grants funds be used first to support the operation of public radio in rural locations, and that the funds not be used to support public TV in areas with commercial television services available. And that was the letter of intent that I had accompanied with this amendment. Mr. Chairman, if it's appropriate, I'd like to just combine both of them together at this time, rather than go through a couple of motions there.
Okay, is there objection to combining the letter of intent with the amendment?
Not. Is there further discussion on the amendment?
Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the concept that he's working for here, but that size of cut, I believe, should be looked at and analyzed over a period of years. So this time we're going to have to oppose it.
Is there further discussion?
Question.
Okay, clerk, call the roll, please.
Representative Sharp?
No.
Representative Romer?
No.
Representative Boyer?
No.
Representative Barnes?
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Jacko?
No.
Representative Kokanen?
No.
Representative Larson?
No.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative McLean?
No.
Representative Love?
No.
There we got it. Amendment failed. Next amendment would be amendment number 3. Department of Administration Information Services, Computer Services, Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt amendment number 3.
Object.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, admittedly, I'm weak as far as expertise in computers, but the commissioner had recommended this for his department, and I would have to respect his recommendation, seeing that the commissioner's expertise is in computers, and it is his feeling that this reduction what he wants is what is needed for the department, and I offer this as a budget reduction amendment.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While it might appear that this is a savings, the dismantling of this mainframe will actually cost, I estimate, several million dollars in lost productivity, as well as direct purchases of additional hardware and software to support the programs that are now on this mainframe computer. I believe that the commissioner was making a sincere effort to reduce his budget when he identified this cut initially. However, when this was looked at by the ISC, the mid-level managers in all these departments, they came up with a long list of problems. There's 33 of them, and they affect multiple agencies. In DOT alone, the cost of restoring and getting back to where we need to be to get the same level of programs up and running on some different set of machines will probably exceed the amount saved in this one area. So I think it's short-sighted to make this cut. I would request that we leave this in the budget so that the commissioner can back off from his stated intention to remove this machine. There are lots of programs running. I believe it's 24 agencies have something running on this machine. They have to find another way to handle all that, and I have the documentation here if anyone would like to look at the specifics behind this, but it's clear that it's going to cost a lot more throughout all the agencies than it's going to save in this one department.
Representative Barnes.
Question, Mr. Chairman, through the chair to Representative Phillips or Representative Brown, whoever knows the answer. Is this the new computer system that we brought on just a few years ago, or is this something that is different from the new mainframe that we bought not too long ago?
Mr. Barnes, I don't think this is the new one. I don't believe it is.
Is there further discussion of the amendment?
Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative
Wilmer?
Nope.
Representative
Boyer?
No.
Representative
Barnes?
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative
Jacko?
No.
Representative
Larson?
No.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative McGuire?
No.
Representative McLean?
No.
Amendment number 3 fails, vote 2-9. Amendment number 4, Department of Administration by Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 4, which would have the effect of reducing the amount budgeted for leases. This would accept the department's recommendation for the leasing budget. The Commissioner of Administration is making an effort to find savings and lease costs throughout government. It may not be possible to achieve this level of savings. However, he has stated that he prefers to see the lower numbers there so that we can keep the pressure on, and he will have the ability to encourage agencies to consolidate and look for cheaper space to lease. My guess is if we do go with this lower number that the department has recommended, we're likely to see a supplemental of some range next year. But I think that in this case, I'd prefer to take their recommendation and let them see what they can achieve in the way of savings.
Representative Larson.
Yeah, just a general question. I know within the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, with the opening of the new Anchorage Armory, there's quite a move from both the Diamond Center and the Frontier Building by that department. Have those cost savings for leases been reflected in your discussion? You
know?
It's my understanding that there's about $650,000 worth of savings that will be within the Department of Administration as a result of the move. And so I support this motion.
They are. I'm not sure what they have calculated into their projections. They are looking, they're scraping every dime to try to meet this lower number. I'd also note, Mr. Chairman, that we previously adopted the subcommittee report, which did have the lower number in it, and somehow the wires just got crossed when this was put into the short form. But previously, our subcommittee recommended this lower number, and it should have been incorporated as the original report. That's why I've said here it's a technical adjustment, but I recognize that there is a policy issue there, which I'm sure Representative Ulmer would like to speak to.
Representative Ulmer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the leasing discussion, which has gone on for many years, is one of those that, you know, just keeps coming back again and again, and I guess it's an unpopular thing, but I think it's a reality that it costs money to put agencies in space. And we have been underfunding leasing for as many years as I've been in the legislature, and every year we have a supplemental appropriation to make up the difference. And as far as I'm concerned, it's kind of a, you know, it's one of those budgeting decisions that you can kind of make with one eye open and one eye closed. If you're willing to admit that it's highly likely that you're going to be back here with a supplemental appropriation and you don't mind that, fine, you know, you can take the savings. But we're not really saving the money. The roughly 20% or so of leases that come up in any given year, you can't find this kind of money in savings in that small number of leases. It takes a longer time to show savings. The last two administrations have really made a significant effort to try to squeeze down leasing, and we have done a pretty good job of that. You know, in the interest of honest budgeting, I'd say you might as well show the real cost of what it's going to be. And if they can find additional savings, great. I'm sure that this commissioner of administration will take them. So, you know, I oppose the amendment just because I think philosophically it's not as honest about what the cost of government really is.
Representative Kopanen and then Brown.
Yes, principally the money shown on this line goes to the private sector. Of course, I realize some of this is lease purchase as well, which I feel shouldn't be in there, but it is. And this is the money that I think since the administration wishes to privatize as many functions as possible, they might as well show up. They're actually paying the private sector for using space.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I think they will achieve some of this savings. I don't know that they will achieve $2.5 million in savings, but I think they're more likely to achieve savings if we go with the lower number. That's why I'm recommending it.
Is there further discussion of the amendment?
Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Boyer?
Yes.
Representative Barnes?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Jacko?
Yes.
Representative Kopanen?
No.
Representative Larson?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative Ulmer?
No.
Representative Navarro?
Yes.
Representative McClain?
Yes.
Amendment number 5 by Representative Barnes and Representative Brown. Representative Barnes.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 5.
Is there objection? Okay.
Chairman, what this amendment does is go back to the governor's number under the public defender and fund the Office of Public Advocacy at a more realistic number, one that would more meet the needs of that agency.
Chairman,
objection
removed. Is there further objection? Without objection, amendment number 5 is adopted. Okay, that's all that we have at this point for Department of Administration decrements. Department of Commerce will be next. Number 6 to Department of Commerce by Representative Brown. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a technical amendment that would reduce what we're showing in PCE by $171,000. This number that I'm proposing is the number that AEA stated at the subcommittee that was needed to fully fund this program in the coming fiscal year.
Is there objection to amendment number 6? Without objection, amendment number 6 has been adopted. Next, the that's all that we have in decrements for Department of Commerce or Department of Community and Regional Affairs. Amendment number 7. Does everyone have their packet?
No.
We'll wait a minute. Amendment number 7 to Department of Community and Regional Affairs by Representative Phillips. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I'll.
I don't understand. Just stand at ease just for a moment. We have increment package on some of them.
Looks like he's trying to do.
There is objection, Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment reduces the amount of money, or let's put it this way, this amendment restores the governor's request for designated grants. And I might add that sooner or later, I believe the legislature is going to have to set up some kind of criteria in dealing with designated grants. And I don't know whether it be this year or next year or end of the decade, but part of the reason I'm offering this amendment is to bring that out as well.
Further discussion? Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Barnes?
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Jacko?
No.
Representative Kopman?
No.
Representative Larson?
No.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Scherr?
No.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Boyer?
No.
Representative McCrum?
No.
Representative Hurrell?
No.
One yes, 10 no. Okay, amendment number 8 is CNRA by Representative Sharp. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a Department of Community and Regional Affairs reduction to Alaska Legal Services down to the governor's request. I move the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Sharp.
Mr. Chairman, I propose a reduction in the grant to Alaska Legal Services of $120,000. The item is located in the budget under the Office of the Commissioner. Mr. Chairman, the activities of the Alaska Legal Services are varied indeed. When one reviews their individual activities over the past several years, it is apparent that many of them involve suing the state of Alaska. Whenever anyone sues the state of Alaska, the cost of the Department of Law increases. Since it's a standard procedure that an assistant attorney general be assigned and staff be assigned to the cases. If the case involves a department or agency of the state, then they too have to dedicate manpower and services to its conclusion. Mr. Chairman, I suggest providing grant dollars to an organization that in turn uses some of those dollars to sue the state is sort of like a banker giving a cashier's check to Jesse James to keep him in business. Since we fund public advocacy, ombudsmen, and others that provide similar types of service to those in need, I urge that we not expand the realm of Alaska Legal Services with state dollars. Simple calculations will show that by cutting $120,000 here and adding the associated cost reductions in the Department of Law and other agencies, we should expect a total savings in the quarter to a half a million dollar range. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my testimony.
Is there further discussion? Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that this is a good amendment. I think it's very important that we maintain access for poor people to the legal system. What this agency does is not similar to the Office of Public Advocacy or the Ombudsman. I don't recommend that we accept this amendment.
Is there further discussion of the amendment? Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Jeffco?
No.
Representative Perkins?
No.
Representative Larson?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative Palmer?
No.
Representative Boyer?
No.
Representative Barnes?
Yes.
Representative Ibarra?
No.
Representative McClellan?
No.
You did a little better than I did.
Amendment fails
4-7.
The next. Decrements proposed for Department of Corrections. The court system is next. There are no court system decrements proposed. Department of Education. Amendment, Department of Education Amendment Number 9 by Representative Phillips. Council of the Arts, Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, by coincidence, this is my license plate number 9, so I move for the adoption of Amendment Number 9.
Check.
Object.
There is objection. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment restores the governor's recommended figure for the arts Council.
For further discussion, Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Representative Phillips. Representative Phillips, what does this do to the federal matching funds?
I don't know.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Boyer.
It reduces them almost dollar for dollar. In fact, this budget does not embrace the full extent to which we could be capitalizing on available federal dollars, and there is a proposed amendment to increase the budget to attract the additional federal dollars. So this would absolutely reduce it by a dollar per dollar amount, the federal receipts that are available.
Is there further discussion? Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Jeffco?
No.
Representative
Perkins? No.
Representative Larson?
No.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
No.
Representative Bowler?
No.
Representative Boyer?
No.
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative McClain?
No.
Representative Navarro?
No.
Amendment fails. Amendment number 10 by who is intending to sponsor this amendment? Representative Barnes.
And does it have Representative Taylor's name that I'm sponsoring it?
Amendment number 10 is by Representative Barnes. Representative Barnes.
I assume it is the one executive administration.
It's executive, that is correct.
Mr. Chairman, I propose to reduce the personal services line by $112,000. The intent of this amendment is to reduce administrative overhead. There is no instructional value derived from this component, and this reduction follows the public mandate to reduce the size of government.
Okay.
I move the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Barnes. Is there objection?
There is objection.
Is there further discussion? Representative Kopanen.
I assume that they're going to need this money next year if they hire a commissioner.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Larson.
Yeah, just for clarification, I assume that this is a kind of across-the-board reduction in addition to the 2% that the governor has already taken, or what is the situation there?
Representative Barnes.
Mr. Chairman, this would be a reduction across the board, and I believe that it is one that this department can easily sustain, since I believe that it is administratively heavy, and I think that most of the people throughout the state think that is true. And maybe they don't need a new commissioner. Maybe they can just make him a deputy commissioner.
Is there further discussion?
This is amendment number 10.
This is amendment number 10. Are you going to speak against it?
Yes. Sorry. I object to the amendment, and I would request the body to vote no on it.
Is there further discussion on the amendment? Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Tiffany?
No.
Representative Larson?
No.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative Ulmer?
No.
Representative Boyer?
No.
Representative Barnes?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Jacko?
No.
Representative Lark?
No.
Representative McClain?
No.
Amendment number 11, well, Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This, I move the amendment.
Without objection. Without objection, amendment number 11 is adopted. Amendment number 12, Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, you have here...
I have
six sheets.
Let me explain.
Six sheets here.
Right.
I'm going to move every one except for page number 2 as amendment number 12.
Okay.
Object.
So we're going to pull out page number 2.
Right. No, he's pulling out.
Oh.
Very good. All right. Okay.
Clarification. Now, Representative Phillips, you're going to.
Okay.
Take out page number two,
and I'll offer that as amendment number 13.
Okay, amendment number 12.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Boyer.
I think, though, that the last item there, the restoration of travel or the deletion of $34,000 is an additional amount now beyond the $17,000 that we just adopted. And, or $13,000 reduction we just adopted, and the total amount that was envisioned with this $34,000 at the last page was the total increment that had been requested by the board. And so you go $13,000 beyond it if you take this additional 34. It should be a total of 34 reduction and not 34 plus 13.
Well, so I had no way of knowing that the prior amendment's going to pass.
The last page of amendment number 12 should be delete $17,000, and that would incorporate any amendment we adopted just previously. Okay, we'll move that as an amendment to the amendment.
To amendment number 12.
To amendment number 12, right.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman, if I can restate the motion again, so.
You need to delete 21 if you're trying to get to 34.
Right. Oh, right. I'm sorry. 21.
To delete 21.
Can I restate that?
Representative Phillips.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'll restate the motion again. I would move for the adoption of amendment number 12, which you have six pages in front of you. We're going to not take up page number 2. And on page number 6, there's an amendment to the amendment. Instead of $34,000, it would be $21,000.
Right.
Okay. Is there objection to amendment number 12?
Well, I'm batting
without
about.
Objection, amendment number 12 is adopted. Amendment number 13, Representative Phillips.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, amendment number, I move for adoption amendment number 13 before you object. It's page number 2.
Asian Russian language program.
Is there objection?
Object.
There is objection. Representative Phillips.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. I'm batting about 333 right now, which is reasonable.
We call that a slugger.
God, I hate to see this one go. Anyway, Mr. Chairman, the reason I'm offering this amendment, this is a new program, and in view of the declining oil revenues, I do not believe state government should be taking on any new programs with that in mind. And that's the rationale behind this amendment.
Is there further discussion? Representative Barnes and
question, Mr. Chairman, since I don't serve on this subcommittee, could I hear some discussion about what the department has said in favor of this program so that I might better understand what's going on here?
I don't think we're taking any time.
Representative Kopenin.
This is a legislatively mandated grant program. The intent is to develop at least some language proficiency among students who will be getting into the business world in upon graduation, and because of our trade relationships with the Asian countries, the fact that we don't have enough people who are able to communicate with the Japanese, the Chinese, or the Russians. So.
Representative Barnes.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. A follow-up question, if I might. It says this is a legislative-sponsored program. I believe it says on this justification form, says this was a DOE-sponsored decrement. Oh, I guess that would be true then. Someone in the legislature had sponsored the program. But I'd like to know how it's working, how the students are selected for this amount of money, or if it's in one school, or just exactly how it's operating.
The grants are given to individual school districts on the basis of their application for them to permit them to set up the program. I believe we have some Department of Education people around here who might describe whether they've done anything or what they've done.
Representative Barnes, would you like to further?
No, I think that's fine. I think I know how I'm going to vote.
Representative Larson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I recall, this was a program that was funded last year through a fiscal note. Mm-hmm. Approximately $243,000 or something. The justification we heard at that time in regards to the concern that I had, like if within the normal instructional unit at this time, school districts are providing language courses in French and Spanish and Russian and so forth, why should this one be any different? And we were told that last year that this was needed in order to encourage school districts to start it so that they could incorporate it into their regular curriculum. I'm surprised that we're back with a increment again to provide the second year of incentive. Is that because the school districts weren't interested last year, or because we need to continue the incentive program to get them to incorporate it into the regular curriculum? Maybe we could hear from the department, and the department might just briefly tell us whether the program was successful, whether school districts used the program, and maybe why additional dollars outside of the instructional unit are needed this year to carry it on.
Ms. Hakala?
this subject matter at this time.
Yes. As I recall in going through this, Mr. Chairman, that there has been demand. These are grants that are going out to school districts. The grants are providing teacher training, materials development, it's incentives to develop Asian or Russian language programs. They're seed monies so that there would be ongoing efforts over the long term. It's for startup only. I understand that there has been demand in excess of what is the funding source at this time. The intent of the funds is not to continue funding the same programs each year, but to expand through the school districts to encourage development and to foster development of Asian or Russian language programs in the districts.
Mr. Chairman, cannot the school districts already do this through their curriculum and through their instructional unit funding? Are what's unique about this particular foreign language from all the others?
I mean, Mr. Chairman, the districts certainly can choose to use their foundation and local dollars to develop Asian, Russian language, Spanish, French, other types of language programs. This was seen as an incentive system because there was a very slow development of Asian, Russian languages. It was really at the followed Representative Ellis's bill requesting that there be an expansion of and a focus on Asian, Russian, Pacific Rim cultures in our school districts.
Mr. Chairman, one of the problems I'm having is within our curriculum and within various reports from various school districts from around the state of Alaska, it just looks to me like we got to start spending a lot more dollars to ensure that we have a good, sound, basic education. And I don't mind. I believe that a foreign language is very important, but I also believe that local school districts can already make the choice of whether it should be Spanish or Russian or Asian or whatever themselves.
Mary, would you
Representative speak? Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mary, am I to understand you're speaking in favor of keeping this amount of money in the budget?
Representative Barnes, I'm simply answering the questions in terms of what the demand has been. We did submit a decrement for this when we were directed to make budget cuts to the Department of Education. We eliminated this funding in the governor's budget. There is no funding for this program.
Mr. Chairman, if I'm not, but the governor didn't tell you where to make the decrements.
That is correct. We were given the task of cutting $37.6 million between out of the department's budget, and we had the discretion to determine how to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further discussion on the amendment? Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it known, has any school district or school facility in the state offered any courses in Asian or Russian languages since these funds were made available last year?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, the dollars we know are going for materials for activities in the school districts this year. Whether it actually has led to a specific teacher being hired, I cannot say at this time. I don't have that level of detail with me. It certainly fostered and is helping that happen. I don't know how many districts or exactly how many teachers have been hired who speak specific languages.
Representative Sharp, did you have a follow-up? Representative Kopanen.
Yes. As I said, this was a legislative directive. School districts can easily fulfill their foreign language requirement by hiring either a Spanish or French teacher, which there are a plethora. French, however melodious it may be, is no longer the language of diplomacy and certainly not of trade. unless we undertake trade with Quebec, I guess. And Spanish is principally useful for those of us who may take vacation in Mexico from time to time. But the legislature's intent was to aid the future economic development of Alaska by developing a body of people in Alaska who, in the next decade, will be able to buy, sell, converse, trade, negotiate with our natural trade partners in Asia. And Russian, Chinese, and Japanese teachers are at very much of a premium, and so we do need to provide some sort of incentive. You know, it is certainly not the, the mission goal of the Department of Education. It is a long-term economic goal for the state.
Representative Larson and Representative Jackson.
Thank you. I'm beginning to get a better understanding of the intent of the program in that now. So I guess my concern that remains is more philosophical than anything else. But to give $227,000 to the school districts, we're spending $71,100 to do that. Do we really need a full-time person to administer $227,000 in grants? That full-time person, as listed under personnel, is $64,400. Now, if we're going to encourage, I guess, Russian Asian language and accomplish the things that Representative Copeland is talking about, which I think are all admirable things to work towards, maybe we should just move that $64,400 in personnel down to the grant lines and see that more money gets to the school districts.
Representative Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be inclined to vote against or vote for this amendment to delete this $274,000. I think as a matter of priorities in our educational system, I'd consider this to be a frill, one that we probably can't afford, seeing as how we can't seem to afford basic operations in single-site, dual-site school districts.
Is there further discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I would move that we move the 64.4 from the 100 line item down and add it to the 227.5 on the 700 line item. And that would still leave money within the department for travel, communications, whatever else they have to do. So at least if we're going to do it, that more of the money goes to the school districts in form of grants than retaining a position within the department. So that would be a motion to amend the amendment.
He restate it, please.
Now, that wouldn't help if we're going to move it around and then eliminate it. So it should be a separate amendment.
Should have passed.
Then if this fails, then a separate amendment would be needed in order to move that money around.
Well, I think the way it's being presented, it's going to fail. The way it be amended, it might have a better chance of passing. So I don't care whichever way, Mr. Chairman, you feel.
Well,
Question.
I'm going to call for the question on this, and if it fails, we can consider it as an increment the way you suggested it. If it does not fail, we'll consider it as an amendment to move the money down to the grant line. Okay. Is there further discussion? Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Larson?
No.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative
Ballmer?
No.
Representative
Myers? Yes.
Representative
Barnes?
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Jekyll?
Yes.
Representative Copeland?
No.
Representative
Clark? No.
Mr.
Chairman?
Four, seven.
Okay. I was caught sleeping. I meant yes for the amendment.
Okay.
5-6.
Amendment fails, 5-6.
Another one here. 2 out of 7.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman, is it The amendment has passed, so I understand that it's too late to amend the amendment at this time because it passed how it was. Is that correct?
No. No, this was a decrement amendment.
This was taken out.
Okay.
We will have an amendment prepared for consideration as part of the increment package to shift the money around. Okay, that concludes the Department of Education. We'll take a very short break. Very fair. Finance Committee meeting will come back to order. Amendment number 14 is by Representative Barnes. Representative Barnes, Department of Environmental Conservation.
This is Representative Taylor's by me. I would move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The massive increases in funding to EQ projects exceed agencies' ability to absorb the funding and to perform the task effectively. Staffing and the specialties required is not available in state, and position classifications have downgraded because of the lack of qualified personnel and technical specialties. Example, development of new classifications which combine environmental field officers, professional personnel with environmental technicians, non-professional personnel, which occurred last year.
For further discussion, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would speak against this amendment. It's an unallocated $7 million reduction. The impacts are likely to be, or would be, significant if this were adopted. As you can see, he's proposing, or Representative Barnes proposing to take $2 million out of general funds and $5 million out of the 470 fund. As the committee knows, following the Valdez, Exxon Valdez oil spill, we adopted a number of major pieces of legislation to improve the quality of our oversight of oil and hazardous substances in the state. We specifically set up a fund or expanded the purposes of the 470 fund with a tax to fund these programs. The effect of taking $5 million out of this would be to leave the agency with enormous responsibilities and without the funding to do the job. Just to mention one area, hazardous waste sites, there are more than 700 hazardous waste sites in the state. The present level of funding, we're only addressing 30 of these per year. I think this would be a big mistake. It would be an invitation to have another Valdez oil spill. The $2 million reduction would go to the heart of a number of core areas, or we don't know how this reduction would be taken, but could potentially affect domestic wastewater, septic systems, regulation of water quality, public drinking water, as well as industrial discharges, air quality, solid waste management. We just don't know how this would be spread, but I am convinced the impact would be considerable. Mr. Chairman, it's important that we maintain a strong environmental program at this time when we're trying to persuade the Congress that Anwar should be open to oil and gas leasing. People are watching our actions, and I think this is a mistake.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you. I agree that we need to maintain a strong environmental quality program. But I do believe that you reach a point where it's excessive and you've got people just running around in circles and twiddling their thumbs. My understanding of the 470 fund was that that fund would be 5 cents a barrel on 5 cents on each barrel of oil that came down the pipeline or we reached 50 million gallons or $50 million. And it would appear to me that it'll never reach $50 million because we are continually depleting that fund. And I recognize the need for environmental quality people. I support that. But as I said, I do believe that we've reached a saturation point, and I do believe that this amendment would make the program more realistic.
Representative Larson and then Representative Navarre.
Yes, thank you. And maybe Representative Brown can help me here as chairman of the DEC. I guess one concern that I have seen yesterday and then again today is in regards to the lack of qualified personnel and technical specialties. Do those qualified personnel and these technical specialties, do they exist? And if they exist, why don't we have them, would be one question. And the other question, as we brought up for some discussion yesterday in regards to the Citizen Oversight Committee, being necessary because DEC officials are not doing their job. There's something wrong within that department if the people who are there aren't doing their job. And number two, if we can't find the technical specialties that are needed to do the job. And maybe we could have some information as to what's being done then to correct these two, and in my opinion, very large deficiencies.
Representative Brown, did you want
to? Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know to what extent there is a lack of qualified personnel with technical specialties. No one raised this issue during the subcommittee process. There are, Dan Easton with the department is here, if you'd like to have him address it. As far as the necessity of the Oversight Council, we passed a bill that made specific findings. We said that a pervasive contributing factor to the Exxon Valdez disaster was the complacency of the oil industry and federal and state agencies who were responsible, and that it was essential to involve local citizens in the process, and that the State Oversight Council would provide that level of oversight to make sure that the agency is doing its job. We specifically identified in the legislation that the Oversight Council could be funded out of the 470 fund, and that they would do specific things. There was some discussion about what were they doing and was it proper. I believe what they're doing is exactly what we asked them to do in the statute that we set up, and that in the first year they have not gotten into all of those areas, but I think their budget is supportable, and that we should follow through on this if we want to avoid similar types of problems coming up in the future. And I defer to Mr. Easton if he has any comments on the qualified personnel and whether we have enough of them.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, a question to whoever can answer it. If there are enough of these qualified personnel, then why did they downgrade the positions because they could not fill them with qualified personnel? And they combine the environmental field officers with these environmental technicians. So I would like to hear from somebody that can answer the question if that is in fact not the case. Because my understanding is it is the case.
Mr. Easton.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dan Easton with DEC. We didn't downgrade any positions. We created a new series that starts with environmental technician and then it continues with environmental specialist after that, but we didn't downgrade any of our positions. As for having trouble getting qualified people, I suppose that we had a normal amount of problem hiring a relatively large number of people over a relatively short span of time, but I think by and large we have pretty good people, and we're relatively satisfied with our staff. We've done some training and some orientation, and we're pretty happy. We don't know exactly why there is some feeling that apparently that we didn't hire the best people. And I might just mention that part of the reason for moving away from the environmental engineers is that things like oil pollution control don't necessarily require an engineering background, and that's why we've gone to environmental specialists instead of engineering.
Representative Larson.
Thank you. Mr. Eaton, apparently there is a feeling, whether it's imaginary or real, that DEC in several important areas are not doing their job. Now, I don't know whether it's because of incompetency or a lack of the special skills that are needed. But apparently, we have a Citizens Oversight Committee to overview the work of DEC, and it's the only agency that I know in government that we're establishing a Citizen Oversight Committee to see that they do their work. And I guess my concern is, why aren't they doing the work that's expected? And what expertise does the Citizen Oversight Committee have available to it that DEC doesn't have available to it to do the job as it should be done?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I mean, the Citizens Oversight Council wasn't just to watch DEC. It had other specific functions, which I can't enumerate for you right now. But it was simply set up to be a watchdog agency for implementation, to watch DEC as well as industry and others, represent, I guess, basically the legislature to some extent during the interim, to make sure that not only was DEC doing its job, but that the state as a whole, industry, the legislature, the agencies were addressing problems pertaining to oil spill prevention and response planning, as well as toxic and hazardous waste management, disposal, and transportation. But I really hope that, by and large, we are doing our jobs. We've grown not only in numbers of positions over the last several years, but we've grown sort of enormously in the scope of responsibility in the agency, and we are trying to do the best that we can given the short period of time that we've been involved trying to make some of these new programs happen.
A short follow-up. I noticed in regards to the request for the Citizen Oversight Committee, there's an increment, of course, that's being used for quote-unquote research to be done or through the oversight of the Citizens Advisory Committee. And I guess my question was, if this research is something that's absolutely necessary, why isn't that in a regular DEC budget to have DEC do that research? Why does the Citizens Advisory Committee have to take on that responsibility?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I'm not exactly sure what the Citizens Oversight Council is proposing to use that additional funding for. The agency's initial budget for the council was less than, I believe, the figure that you've seen. Now, it would be, I guess, probably best to ask them the need for the additional amount. The agency, I don't believe, opposes that amount. Its initial thinking was something less than what's in.
I guess that's part of my confusion. I don't know what the amount that's being asked for. One place we saw $490,000, the other place $250,000, and I don't know if you know, if it's the duplication of any services or whether
it's asking for $490,000 and it's being funded out of the $470,000 fund.
Right. And in the Ledge Council recommendation, there was $250,000 there.
That reflects
part of the $490,000?
Part of the $490,000. I also want to say that the Exxon Valdez pointed out a number of areas in state government and industry oversight that we were deficient in, and that is one of the reasons why we set up the Citizens Oversight Council. I can speak only to some of the staff that I know personally, and they are very good, probably some of the most qualified people we have formerly working for the state, now working, I guess, for the legislature on the Citizens Oversight Council. With respect to the 470 fund, there is a difference of opinion, Representative Barnes, that we discussed fairly extensively on the DEC subcommittee with respect to whether or not you're supposed to try to fill up the 470 fund to $50 million so you can turn off the tap immediately. That's not what the intent of the legislation was when we passed it. The intent of the legislation was so that we could assess and clean up, do environmental mitigation on
on hazardous substances around the state. And there are numerous sites that have not yet been assessed and are nowhere near being cleaned up that do pose significant threats to the public's health and well-being. We never capitalized it until we put the nickel a barrel surcharge on a couple of years ago after the Exxon Valdez, and it's my opinion and my what I recall from discussions about setting up the 470 fund and when we capitalized it, that it doesn't matter to me how soon we fill up the fund. What matters to me is how soon we take care of the environmental mitigation necessary for these hazardous substance sites around the state. And there are some people in the department who disagree with that philosophy, and I'm going to be keeping my eye on them because most of them were not here when the legislation was implemented, and I think have a very shallow understanding of the entire concept behind the 470 fund. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I, like you, want to see all of the environmental pollution in whatever form cleaned up. I would like to point out that the 7th of July, 1989, in just the classified and partially exempt category, in DEC, we had 288 people. And it's 3/11/91, we had 450 people. That's 162 more in just the classified and partially exempt than we had when the spill took place. And again, like you, I want to see any environmental damage that we have taken care of. But I am concerned, and I do know that they did combine the field officers, the professional personnel, with environmental technicians, non-professional people. And do we then have non-professional people working in the areas of environmental quality? And if we do, are they doing the job that a professional person should be doing? And I'd like some rationale as to why these people were combined, because it's a fact that it happened. And what is this 162 more people doing now than was happening in 1989?
Representative Barnes, I just want to say that with respect to whether or not they're qualified, I think that the department and the people who are responsible for filling those positions probably have a far better understanding than people who are pointing the finger from this legislature. That is an administrative responsibility to make sure that they hire responsible people, and we have oversight on that. And I know that that is what you're getting at, but I would also submit that some of the people who are suggesting that they are not qualified within this agency are people who maybe don't know what they're talking about.
Could I have a response from the witness to my question, since it's him that I asked, not the chairman, who doesn't have anything but oversight?
Representative Barnes, you're out of order.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnes, what we did was we had two series. One was called an ecologist series. One was called an environmental field officer series. They're both professional series employees. They both required college educations in biology or some sort of environmental science background. We combine those series into an environmental specialist series just because the distinction between what an ecologist does and what a environmental field officer does was relatively blurred. At one time it was distinct. So there was no, that was the only combining that we did. Then we have always had an environmental technician job class, and all we did was to turn that into a series. We have environmental technician 1, 2, and 3 now, and then that series ends and it starts with environmental specialist, and goes environmental specialist 1, 2, 3, and 4. So those are the only changes that we've made in our jobs, and most of the people that we've hired recently have been environmental specialists. And the things that were, that those 162 people are doing now that we weren't doing previously, I'm not sure I can enumerate all of them, but we've added since fiscal year 89, or beginning with fiscal year 89, a Contaminated Sites program to, you know, people to go out and oversee contractors and responsible parties in cleaning up contamination that's been caused by improper or inadequate disposal of waste. We've added a substantive oil spill prevention planning and response program that we didn't have before. That oil spill program was less than 10 people, I believe, in fiscal year 1988. It's roughly 70 people now, so that big chunk went to oil spill planning and response. We've added a number of smaller things, a small pollution prevention program, and I'm afraid that my mind sort of goes blank, and as well as just sort of
broad. Well, perhaps you can just get back to me with that information. I don't want to tax you here.
Representative Phillips.
So, Mr. Chairman, maybe going referring back to Representative Larson's perception of the public at DEC, I'm personally aware of one person here in Juneau, which I talked to Representative Ulmer about a year ago, and one in my area. Both of them brought this concern within 3 or 4 days apart. Neither individual know each other, and that is, there's a suggestion that there was a shortage of people in the state of Alaska, and that some of these people were hired from out of state once they got here and lived here for 30 days and they were picked up later. Now, I don't find that coincidental when one of my constituents calls me up, and then 4 days later, this guy happens to be a good friend of mine here in Juneau, and he's eminently qualified for the position. He was just furious that DEC brought somebody up, or the person came up here, lived here 30 days, and was hired by DEC in that sequence. So I don't know what your hiring practices are or were, but some of that perception may be reality.
Question.
We'll get a report back on this. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to add that when we had some supplemental appropriations come through here a few weeks ago to the tune of quite a few hundreds of thousands of dollars from the department, I requested some background on who authorized the expenditures, since the funds hadn't been appropriated or had been vetoed, and that I found out that I got good. I got. I found out, or I got the information back in writing that detailed out that they had been authorized to do this, that they had been, or they had been encouraged to do it. They got information to proceed as if the funds were there. So I wrote back and asked them for copies of the authorization or memos or whatever. In each case, Mr. Chairman, they came back and said, well, there was no written authorization. There was no documentation to proceed to spend these hundreds of thousands of dollars. But they did proceed to spend. Even the commissioner, present commissioner, wrote me a letter saying that was indeed true. And that's what gives me concerns about the operation of this department, sir.
I appreciate that, Representative Sharp. I guess, again, vote on this. That is an administrative function, and we can investigate that further, and we will, Representative Bourne. Is there further discussion?
Apparently, then, within DEC, there is not a lack of qualified personnel and technical specialties. So we can assume, then, that they have the expertise to do the job. And with that, I would assume, then, that after that's confirmed by the Oversight Committee, maybe this is the last year, then, that we need these expenditures.
Question. Is there further discussion? Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative Lummer?
No.
Representative
Boyer? No.
Representative Barnes?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Jeffers?
No.
Representative Kopenin?
No.
Representative Larson?
No.
Representative Navarro?
No.
Representative McClain?
No.
Okay, that's all for DEC.
the next department that we have, the Department of Fish and Game. Amendment number 15 by Representative Sharp. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 15.
Object.
There is objection, Representative Sharp.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, this increment was added by the subcommittee during our course of our deliberations on the final day. The justification offered for this increment was what I consider shaky at best. It funds a halftime information officer to attend board meetings of the Fish Board, record major decisions, and provide a synopsis for review at future sessions. Mr. Chairman, I believe that there are currently staff made available to record the minutes of all the meetings of the board, that the minutes are processed in the past and currently and distributed and properly filed for the future review by anybody who cares to look at it. Now is not the time to further expand the list of state employees for supplementing a service and cost area that is already being provided. Therefore, I move amendment number 15.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment was offered in response to a recommendation from Senator Dick Eliason and his conversations with the chairman of the Board of Fisheries. They discussed and agreed that although minutes are kept, they are not, the data and decision-making is not organized in a way that provides useful information to new Board of Fisheries members so that they can have a historical perspective on how decisions have been made, why they've been made, and be able to put in context decisions that are imminently before them in a longer period. And particularly as we're seeing a lot of boards and commission members coming and going, I think we're beginning to understand how important it is to have some historical perspective recorded someplace. And I really sincerely believe that this will assist the decision-making of future boards of fisheries.
I, Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, just philosophically, I support the amendment number 15. You know, we might as well have a historian for the legislature and make the same argument. And there's 14 brand new members in the House out of 40. And there's only one left out of the last 15 years of me. So, you know, as far as historical memory is concerned, the same argument could be made for the legislature, but I just don't think this position is necessary. And I know you're trying to get rid of it, but that's fine, Mr. Chairman.
We'll disappoint you as our historian.
I would say that the previous speaker is our historian.
I might add for a lot less money, Mr. Chairman.
I just add that I've come to know Senator Eliason pretty well over the last few years. I think he's perfectly capable of getting an increment on the other side if he feels that strongly about it. I really think that this is a very unneeded service, and it's therefore that's the reason for the amendment.
Further discussion? Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Sharp.
Yes.
Representative Bowman.
No.
Representative
Blair? Yes.
Representative
Brown? Yes.
Representative
Brown? Yes.
Representative
Jackal? No.
Representative
Jackal? No. Representative
Clinton?
No. Representative Larson? Yes.
Representative
Phillips? Yes. Representative McLean? Yes. Representative McCall? Yes. Hey, you got one, Bert. You got a better average than I do. What's your
secret? Younger.
It's pressure. It's got new ideas.
You're about seven.
Yeah, I'm up. 16.
Amendment number 16 by Representative Phillips. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, are we taking the reduction in Fred? Is that the one?
Yes.
Okay. Because I have three of them.
This is the Fred.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment number 16.
Jack?
Mr. Chairman, this is the recommended budget by the administration. Therefore, I'm making the same recommendation to the committee as a whole for this reduction.
Representative Ulmer?
Mr. Chairman, the idea of closing hatcheries that the legislature has appropriated money to and that has basically have provided a very important additional source of fish in the state, I think, is a really big mistake. The idea that some of these hatcheries might be converted to the private nonprofits, the regional aquaculture associations, is a good idea, and a few of them are ready to be transferred with some capital appropriations. The subcommittee has met at some length with the regional aquaculture associations to have an understanding as to which ones are ready to transfer and what will be required to make that a reality. And doing it on a piecemeal basis, kind of deciding which ones are ready, making that transition make sense. Simply closing the door and taking all of the funding out of the operating budget doesn't make any sense. I think it's another example of how you can't build capital projects and then expect they're overnight to be taken over by somebody else. It's unrealistic. So I oppose the amendment.
Yeah. I oppose the amendment also, and if the administration had a historian, they probably wouldn't be recommending this. Is there further discussion? Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Ulmer?
No.
Representative Boyd?
No.
Representative Lawrence?
Yes.
Brown?
No. Oh, excuse me. I meant to say no.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Jeffrey?
No.
Representative Kopenick?
No.
Representative Larson?
No.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative Navarre?
No.
Representative McClain?
No.
Two yeses and one no.
Amendment number 16 failed.
Yes. Two and nine.
Amendment number 17 by Representative Phillips.
Chairman, I move amendment number 17.
Object.
Chairman, this is very similar to amendment number 16. It reduces the commercial fishing division to the governor's requested level. I might add that the state of Alaska, I think it's last year's figures, spent about $45 million for the fisheries industry and took in about $25 million in taxes directly related to the fisheries. And at some point in time, here again, maybe this year, next year, or later on in this decade, this industry is going to have to pay for its requested services and not be subsidized by the general fund. Therefore, I move amendment number 17.
Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Chairman, this is one of the few industries in Alaska other than oil and gas that actually makes a contribution to the state treasury. If you compare it to mining, agriculture, tourism, any number of other programs in which we spend considerable amounts of money to subsidize private industry in the state, fisheries goes a long way toward not only giving to the state treasury a portion of what it gets out of it, but also creating the most jobs in the private sector of any industry in the state. So the rationale that that the mover of the amendment has made, I think, really is inappropriate. The commercial fisheries management is an extremely important responsibility of the owner state. It's one of the few renewable resources that will be here when oil and gas and gold and all the rest are gone. And the whole idea that we would gut the commercial fish management as this proposed amendment and as the governor's budget originally did is really wildly inconsistent with the notion of not only what our constitutional responsibility is with regard to the fishery, but also our major employer in this state. I oppose the amendment.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I don't intend to support the amendment. I do want to say that Representative Phillips is very correct in that someplace along the line that our resources have to pay for themselves. Commercial fishing does not pay for itself. We put more into it than comes back to the Treasury in the form of taxes. So the money to fund the commercial fishing has to come from somewhere. Obviously, it's coming from petroleum dollars. And very often, those same commercial fishing that fishermen that we are putting money into their pockets also oppose development of oil and gas, so our oil and gas resources. So I think it's important that we do all we can to enhance our commercial fisheries. But on the other hand, I think we have to recognize the fact of what's going to happen down the road when we don't have petrodollars if some of these other people don't start carrying their share of the burden.
There further discussion? Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to add, and I mentioned this in the Finance Subcommittee, I think we're getting close to the time when the Department of Fish and Game really has to start looking at putting some emphasis in this, all the areas of the state of Alaska that are more than 5 miles away from Tidewater. The benefiting effect of what the department does for commercial fishermen